So I am thrilled to have Jim Horton back with us today. This is the third time that we've talked. And what I would say about Jim is there's a connection that I have with him that is so real and genuine. And he's just so present in his experience of his journey with addiction, his son being addicted, and then subsequently his son passing away. And then he and his wife setting up the Zachary Horton Foundation, which he is very involved with to this day. And so there's an evolution to Jim's journey, and I'm very privileged and honored to be on that evolution with him. We were introduced by a mutual friend of ours out of Louisiana, Meredith Eicher, who we both love and adore.
Yes.
And so shout out to her for a brilliant connection here. And so I was talking to Jim just recently, and we're kind of headed into that the holiday season, which, kind of from Halloween through maybe even the 4th of July, not 4th of July, Super Bowl weekend is kind of a peak time of year for people to navigate addiction and for families and loved ones to figure out, how do I do this in a way that I can figure out how to be with my addict or my alcoholic, love them through it, and yet honor myself in the process of kind of creating the holidays that I most want to create. And so I wanted to talk to Jim about it. And so I want to thank you, Jim, for joining me today to have this conversation.
Absolutely. Well, KL, as always, it's such a pleasure to share any time with you. And let me start by saying I really appreciate the words that you had for me that described what my journey has been like. And that occasionally I'll get feedback from people, and they'll tell me, they say, "Oh my gosh, Jim, from where you were a couple of years ago, it's just tremendous what we see." And I've got to say that is so valuable for me to hear, because when you live in my skin, I don't see that progress. And in fact, what happens, I think a lot of times for us in any walk of life, we view ourselves, unfortunately, only by our lowest points. I remember in college reading a book by Powell. Oh, I can't. Boy, that was decades ago. But I remember him saying in one of the books is that we often we judge our weaknesses against somebody else's strengths. And very seldom do we judge our strengths adequately. So if I have a strength, I just judge that as something that, hey, I'm very successful at, but anybody could do that. Like, I don't have any problem talking in front of people, right? Well, but the reality is I know that that's really difficult for some people to do, right? So anyway, so I say all of that, KL, just say when I get that feedback, it is so important for me to hear that. And now I get to judge myself through somebody else's eyes. And I would recommend that everybody out there, if you know someone who's lost someone or who's went through a tough time and you see some growth in them, they need to hear that. That's the stuff that they need to hear. Don't just assume that, oh, so and so is doing great. Look, aren't they doing great? No, they really need to do that. That's a reality check that can be very valuable for them.
Absolutely. I mean, having other people's perspective is super important. And like you said, we're in our own skin. And so, those of us who are maybe paying a little bit more attention to our own evolution, great. But for the most part, in certainly in this circumstance where you have actually lost a child, and that takes you to depths of emotions that most of us don't experience. And so there's a reality about your experience that I have not experienced.
Right.
And And I don't, I do not want to find myself in that position where I talk to you and I have an experience with you and I think, oh, you've got it. You've got it. You've got it made. Because I know, at least on my side of the aisle, relative to my own experience, it is a journey. It is an evolution. It doesn't always look this put together. It you know, there are ugly days or moments still. And so I think, like you said, people judge themselves against, like, they could look at you and say, well, look how good Jim's doing, you know, and I'm not doing as well as he is. Well, so my first response is, number one, never, ever, ever judge yourself against somebody else because you have no idea what's going on behind the scenes of that person's life. And take the pieces that help you elevate to that next version of yourself that you are inspired to live into.
Yes, I like that. Absolutely.
And so the reason to have this conversation today is because at this point you've been almost, you know, you're approaching 4 years into right. Zach's passing. And, you know, this year isn't going to look like it did last year or the year before or the year before or the year before. And I would love to hear kind of the evolution of this journey for you, because I do absolutely believe that people need to hear the evolution of the journey to know that that is in fact what is the road and the path that they're on.
Sure. No, my pleasure. And so let me step back into, so I'm going to speak of things, from terms of my grief journey. Okay. And what the holidays look like, you know, through there. So, understand it's pretty common. The first year of a grief experience, especially of losing a child. And it doesn't have to just be a child. It could be losing a close pet, a parent, a friend, a spouse. These things hit us all differently. I know from losing all of those things, from losing parents and losing pets and losing best friends, I can speak to the severity of losing a child and how much greater that is even beyond that. And they say that the first year is really, you're just numb. You're about 18 months into the process before you even begin to process things even close to how you used to process them.
Yeah.
So people need to, you know, or people need to, people would be wise to see that if someone has lost someone a few months ago, and now we're coming up on the holidays and, you know, they have a tradition of doing X, Y, Z, and well, why don't they want to do that? Why aren't they around? They're just numb, or they may show up and break down halfway through it. And the truth is that once you lose a child, especially, there's some similarities of how I used to be, Kale, but I am a new person. I have been reborn. And frankly, I don't even know what that's like yet. I'm just now beginning to figure it out because I'm almost 4 years into this process. Right. So that first year, that first year, I was numb with everything that happened. And then the second year, they call this year then the year of first. So it's the first time that you experience their birthday, the first time you experience Christmas without them, the first time you experience. So there's this year of firsts that we get to experience, and we get to see what it's like. And there are a lot of very well-meaning people that want to tell you how you should feel, and that your loved one wouldn't want you to be sad, or that they're in a better place. And I can say all of those things, while they may be true, it brings absolutely zero comfort. And in fact, sometimes it raises an anxiety and a frustration that is unimaginable. Right. So, So really the best thing that a grieving person can hear is that they're exactly where they need to be right now.
Yeah.
And that's really all that they have. So as I, and now here's the challenge, as my wife and I are experiencing this together, we are in completely different grief journeys.
Yes.
So while I attacked or approached my grieving by staying as busy as I possibly could be, by excessive exercise, by creating a foundation that that now I spend 40 to 50 hours, oftentimes even more than that, every week, the volunteering with and just pouring myself into it, and wanting to talk about Zach as much as I can to everyone that I can. That wasn't her journey. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. And in fact, in that first year for us, we were really diametrically opposed in how we approach things. Yeah. So that really created a challenge for us. Now, as I read books and I understood that that was normal, then I was able to accept that. Mm-hmm. Right. But I think, and I mentioned this to you the other day, oftentimes there's a statistic that's raised with couples that lose a child that there's a high divorce rate among that. And I could attribute that, if in fact that is accurate, I would attribute that to the fact that oftentimes if people aren't getting a counseling, or they don't have an opportunity to really experience their grief, and they hold that inside, and they're on different paths, and there's no discussion about that. Again, they're different people, and there's going to be a separation either inside of a marriage or just the disillusionment of the marriage. I could see that happening, very easily. That process doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, and I think, Jim, part of it is that we are so ill-equipped for handling grief, period, that when something this traumatic happens, we make up all these stories about how people should be grieving. And if they're not grieving that way, then they must not really be, missing them that much. There's all these stories that we make up. And the truth is, we all do grief differently.
Yes.
There's the big buckets of grief, in terms of the things that are present for grief, but our experience of it in our own skin is ours uniquely. And so there's a couple things there. One is, as a friend for somebody who's grieving, is just be present.
Yes.
With grace and love, period. Leave the judgment, leave the ideas, leave whatever you think it should be at the door, if you truly care about somebody. And the flip side of that is, it causes us as a loved one to deal with our own stuff around grief. And so when somebody that we know and we love is in deep grief, and we haven't done our own work, we have no idea how to show up for them, how to do this thing, so on and so forth. So that's part of what's happening there, is learning how to grieve, and learning how to allow with grace and love others to grieve.
No, that's it. That's it exactly. And because the holidays are such a family oriented, sensitive time, there's so many rituals around the holidays that we have. So it gives even more and more opportunity for us to either practice supporting someone in a good way, or just, if we don't understand or don't know, really making it miserable, right, for them. So I know that for our family, the first couple years, and every holiday that we get, because Zach was 19 when he passed. So every birthday, every Halloween, every Thanksgiving, every Christmas, St. Patrick's Day, Easter, 4th of July. These were all opportunities for me to go up in the attic and bring down tubs of decorations. And my wife would decorate the house, you know, to the nines every single holiday. Right. And so that was her love expression, you know, to Zach and to our family, you know, about how, you know, we got to celebrate that on Thanksgiving, because we didn't have family around. Oftentimes we would either visit family or we would have friends that would come over and we would create an extended family again with all of our decorations. And again, you know, giving Zach that experience. And now we remove Zach from this ritual, from these times that are all the pictures. If we think back, just about all the pictures we have of Zach are around his birthday, around Christmas, around some kind of a festivity, right? Which always has to always. Thinks about a holiday. And it all changed. It all changed. And my wife, her way of dealing with it was, we will never decorate again. And again, that's what you believe at the first. And for the first 2 years, we didn't have a single decoration in the house. Because we live in a neighborhood and we want to be part of a community, I still hung Christmas lights outside with, you know, no yard art, you know, but for Halloween and for Christmas, I still hung lights and did some decorations because we have kids that live around us and I don't want them to be punished or have less of an experience, you know, right? So, but once you entered inside of our house, you know, there was just nothing. So that's how we dealt with it then. Now I can tell you, this year coming up, we're talking about, you know, maybe visiting some family, mm-hmm. right? Again, and I suspect that, last year we had a couple of items, you know, that we placed in the house. Still, we haven't had a tree. You know, we used to have two trees. We had a tree in two different rooms and still haven't had a tree. But I suspect that that now we're able to start to build and maybe grow a little bit. And I don't expect that our celebrations will ever be the same, but I believe that we may be able to watch a holiday show on TV without it being devastating for us.
Right.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right. And now let me reflect too what it has been like. I believe in our second year we did go to some family for Thanksgiving, and again, because Thanksgiving is one of those, just like Christmas, it's one of those ritualistic times where extended family comes over and we share all that, and then there's Lynn and I without a son. And everybody else has their family with them. And everyone else is talking about the growth of their children and how wonderful the school years is and the sports that they're participating in. And that's what we celebrate, right? At times like that with our family. So that is still very raw and tough for us. And the fact is, and we want to celebrate that with the people we love. We really do. But sometimes it's just so hard that we can't. And we don't know how it's going to affect us. I can't just make up my mind that it's not going to bother me today.
Sure.
That's just not possible. So that's still something that we deal with. But I'm telling you, early on, it is very evident. So as someone supporting someone like myself or another family member, just understanding and realizing that, you know, that's why Aunt Joan, is really crying a lot today is because she's missing her. I mean, if you had to explain it to children, you know, she's missing her children, you know, and letting them know that, hey, if you need some time alone here, the bedroom, this is a safe place for you to go. Mm-hmm. If you need that time, you right. know, and not demanding that, you know, hey, it's been 3 or 4 years. Don't you think you should be moving on now? I mean, all I can think about is just a tirade of expletives that just want to flow. you know, and I know people always mean their best, mm-hmm. but it's one of those things until you've experienced it, you really don't. Mm-hmm. You really can't. And that's what I understand now. Even my experience of the loss of a child is different than someone else's. So I no longer expect them to have a similar experience that I have.
Right. Right. Yeah. And so did you and your family going into, let's just say Thanksgiving, kind of have some sort of conversation about how this experience might be for you or even for them?
I was not far enough along in my journey to even be able to express that or understand it. Mm-hmm. I wasn't thinking in those terms, you know, yet. That's something that I could do now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I've also, let me say, much like, you know, my son's addiction journey, I know more now than I ever wanted to. You know, I read everything I get my hands on. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing about my grief, you know, my grief journey, you know, and mm-hmm. And working with, my wife and I continue to co-facilitate a grief group, right? Mm-hmm. And working with them. So, you know, 4 or 5 times a year, we get a brand new group of freshly mourning parents that have lost a child that we get to go through. And it's at those times that I can see how far I've grown, because I don't see mm-hmm. it in myself, but I can reflect back and I can see them and I go, oh my God, and I feel their pain.
Yeah.
Hey, oh, I feel it. I know where they're at.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It is so, it's so devastating, but I hope through my being there, because now I see where I am. And I know that every day is not, it's not 10 hours of that trauma. It may just be a brief moment. And sometimes now I have complete days where I don't feel any of that severe grief. There's just mild sadness. You know, I can go 2 or 3 days now sometimes if I'm involved in something else and I don't have that depth. I mean, I will always be sad. I will always miss Zach. I will always love him, but I see a progression of change. But I'm talking about, it's almost been 4 years. Mm-hmm. That is a long, and it's probably only been the last couple months that I felt like this. Mm-hmm. That's a long time to live in despair, mm-hmm. or not knowing that mm-hmm. things could ever be different.
Yeah.
So being in this group has helped me, mm-hmm. has really helped me to understand that, to be able to be present for somebody else. And hopefully they get to see that in me. So hopefully they look at me and when they hear the story, and I'm told that's one of the main purposes for me being there is they get to hear me share. And there's times that I am right next to them, mm-hmm. feeling exactly how they feel for that day.
Right.
Right. But then there's times that they get to see that I've progressed out. And if that can bring them just a picture of a little hope or just that their journey is not always going to look exactly the way that it looks today. Because I'm telling you, for the first 2.5 to 3 years, that's exactly how it felt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that is never going to change. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think I would imagine that's what gets people stuck in the never ending cycle of the devastation of this. And if they can touch these moments of hope. And I think maybe joy is a little too strong, but aliveness again, maybe.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, because I think that's the, I know I said this all the time through my first 2 years, 2.5 years, that there is an absence of joy. The thought of ever feeling joy or happiness is not even in the landscape.
Right.
It's just gone. And even today, again, when I say that I've been reborn and that I'm a different person now, things that I enjoyed before, I was oh my gosh, I loved golf. It was my passion. I played a lot. I played in tournaments all the time. It was one of those things that I couldn't imagine ever not doing. My picture of retirement was going to be, you know, going to the club every day, doing a small workout, playing 18 holes of golf, coming in, having happy hour with the boys, you know, going home, fixing dinner, and then just repeating that. Kind of like being on vacation, but for the last 20 years of my life, that's what I thought of. Mm-hmm. After Zach passing, I play golf now maybe once a month. And it's for a purpose of being able to spend some extended period of time with someone that I'm working with in the foundation, mm-hmm. or it's spending time with a friend that I haven't seen for a while.
Right.
And there's absolutely no happiness or desire about scoring well, or the things that I prioritized before.
Right.
It's not even there. And that's just such a different, mindset, because all those things before, if I had a great round, boy, that brought me such exhilaration and excitement. Mm-hmm. And it's just not there. And now I understand there has been a rewiring in my brain.
Yes.
With people that suffer PTSD, they think of things differently. Mm-hmm. There's connections, there's neural pathways that have been destroyed. And now I'm recreating some. Right. My dopamine levels don't fire the way that they used to. There's not that same experience that's there. And that's why I think oftentimes people in grief, they turn to drugs or alcohol as a way to just feel better, to get through it. So I get that, to try to feel some sense of normality again. Right. And that's just not there. After 4 years, though, now, like I said, I'm starting to get a glimpse that there's some potential that in my new life that I'm creating, mm-hmm. I may be able to create some happiness or joy. It's just going to be different than what I experienced before.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So what will that look like? Now, what I have been able to do through my foundation is create a lot of meaning. Right. And I want to throw out a shout to David Kessler has a book, Finding Meaning. Right. And it is incredible for anyone experiencing loss. And I would definitely go to that. It was a life changer for me to be able to redefine what I used to think, because that's the danger when you're stuck in this grief pattern, is thinking life has no meaning for me. And that's a dangerous place. That's a dangerous place to be.
Yeah. Well, do you think at this point, Jim, that the meaning that we give our lives is also an evolving process?
Yes. Yeah. And I think maybe even more so for someone who's experienced the, you know, loss like I have. So I would hope that for most people, meaning is evolving throughout the general population. what I fear happens is, and what happened for me is, we kind of get stuck in a treadmill of having more, wanting more, getting more, doing more. And we define that meaning by the things that we accumulate, right? The cars that we drive, or the status that we get to observe. And those become the things that we seek after, right? But so that's still evolving there. I think those of us that want to work on a personal benefit level, mm-hmm. that want to be more mindful and more present in our awareness, I think that my chart in life now the path that I'm charting is more like theirs, where my meaning is evolving. Right now, it is definitely all wrapped around my foundation and how I can hopefully ease the suffering of other parents, that somehow I can bring awareness and education to young families that they don't have to experience this, or to the recovery community that they are able to move through their recovery with not necessarily more speed, but just with more mindfulness and with more grace, that they give themselves more grace as they're in their recovery process. So that's my meaning and my goal now. Mm-hmm. I see a path forward for me where maybe after 5 years, 6 or 7, that I can find some meaning in my life through rituals that my wife and I will develop that are different, maybe even outside of the foundation, mm-hmm. that I can begin to create a life that's separate or runs parallel with that. Cause as Zach will always be part of my life.
Of course.
And because that foundation is now, a legacy to him and a reminder of him always, that's always going to be a part of my life. So that meaning will continue to evolve. I'm very hopeful that I will also be able to continue to evolve myself, separate from that. I'm not there yet, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm hopeful.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if there are multiple layers of meaning that are at play. Because it's not just the foundation, which really part of it, that I'm inspired by is the whole notion of shattering the stigma of addiction. I know that's been part of my journey, and the isolation that people feel because of it. They're not willing to talk about it because of the shame, the stigma, the judgment, so on and so forth. It is far more prevalent than the vast majority of people believe or know. And so by your voice, it sends a ripple effect through your community in changing the conversation. That's incredibly powerful. And then the work that you and Lynn do relative to the grief work is you're showing up, I think, in ways that maybe don't necessarily show themselves to you. Because I see it as a courageous act. Number one, to decide to do a grief counseling work for yourselves in the midst of this grief, because it's this kind of grief is almost unimaginable. And to be courageous enough to go to a group to be vulnerable like that, that's one thing. And then to continue to do it, and then to be the ones who create the container and the space for others to bring their grief and their vulnerability to the table. It's an interwoven, the way that my brain works, it feels very interwoven in terms of meaning and connection and purpose in life. So I don't know if that resonates with you.
Kale, thank you so much for saying that. Mm-hmm. And again, that goes back to the very beginning of our conversation. Seldom do we get a mirror held up to us where we get to see mm-hmm. that's what perhaps other people see? Because I'll tell you, it doesn't feel courageous.
Well, from my side of the aisle, it's super courageous.
I just feel broken so much.
Mm-hmm.
But if through this process, other people can see a way out or connect to that, then that is, I mean, that's the dream, right? That's the dream in the recovery world and the grief world. If that can bring about that connection, then that's really what we shoot for. And I see people, again, being in all the groups that I'm at, I see people oftentimes even after a year or two that they still, there's oftentimes still a choice, I believe, of anger, of frustration. And again, I get that. That's the way that their path has taken them. But that is, I think that's so difficult. And I think sometimes that blocks the process when we don't allow ourselves to experience our grief. That doesn't mean that we're not angry, that we don't blame somebody else, that we don't want there to be justice or somebody punished for this terrible injustice that we feel that's come our way. But when that becomes our only focus, I think that we are prohibiting ourselves for an opportunity to work through that level of our grief. And believe me, once we get through that level, there's plenty of levels left. It's not like, hey, I don't want to let go of that because then I'm not going to be able to feel anymore. Oh no, trust me, you're going to feel forever, you know, but I think the decision that I made to not get stuck in some of those areas or to want to just feel through it and work through it, I think has allowed me now to see some new levels, and those are always new challenges, that are coming along. But that's something that, again, I would never tell somebody, this is what you need to do. This is how you do it the right way. I'm just aware of it. When I see somebody else, I can identify with that feeling. I know what that feeling feels like.
Mm-hmm.
And for a little bit, I am somewhat thankful that I've worked through that. Now, just working through it doesn't mean that it never doesn't show up again.
Sure.
But every time it shows up, now I have a pathway, or I can think, oh, I remember what that is. Mm-hmm. I can identify what that is.
Mm-hmm.
I can honor it. I can give mm-hmm. it some time and space.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can go ahead and now set it aside and now move on to the other things that I was working on. Right. So, sometimes in grief work, we talk about compartmentalizing, and sometimes I give myself that time where I just jump all the way into the worst possible thoughts. And then I'm able to say, okay, now it's time to move on. And I can set that to another part of my brain back here and just put that back there. Say, I'll revisit you again. In a week or two, but now I'm going to do this, mm-hmm. Which is wonderful to be able to do that, as opposed to being hijacked by that or being triggered by it and not understanding or knowing why or when it happened. So, but again, that's only came just with time. And I think, all the deep work that I've been doing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I the way that I think about things, and we've talked about this before, is that the most traumatic things that have happened in my life I have viewed them as getting cracked wide open. And I've always viewed that cracking as an opportunity for me to rise into my own humanity at a higher level. And so, those moments when I have been dropped to my knees in surrender and sobbing, I have enough experience at this point that I know it is a butterfly moment, honestly. It is, and I can hold those two things in the same place at the same time. But that has come with years of practice and belief to be able to know that in my journey, that is my truth. Right. And so that's why I say is, you know, these conversations are about each one of our truths. And people can pick the things out of our truths that they resonate with and let the rest of it go.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what this is about, is these kinds of real conversations about what's our journey is and our truths gives people an opportunity to go, oh, okay, that is true for me too. And if that's true for me too, then maybe this could be true for me.
Yes. Right. And what I mean, that's it. Exactly. That's it. Exactly. And then having the willingness to be open for there to be a possibility.
Right. There. Right.
And again, let me say to someone who's early on in their grief journey, mm-hmm. there's not that possibility now. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, don't beat yourself up, you know, about that. Let that go and know that that's, again, you're exactly where you need to be right now.
Yes. So let me piggyback off on that, because I think that's super critical, is for wherever you are in the course of your journey, please stop judging yourself.
Yes.
Really, just stop it. There's enough going on in your life where you actually need to embrace that little child in yourself and hold them in that moment and stop judging yourself in terms of where you think you should be or where people have said you should be or anything along those lines. That's where my ferocity kind of comes up, is please stop, please, please, please stop. And never, ever, ever allow others to judge you in where you are in your grief.
Yes. No, that's it. I hear all the time, you know, again, and one of the challenges is as someone who's lost a child, we'll get someone that'll come up to us a month later, 2 months later. Hey, how are you doing? You know, you say, well, how the hell do you think I'm doing? You know, right? You know, and then that changes to may see you 6 months or a year later, and it's, you know, and there's almost this expectation that now you've moved on.
Yes.
You know, and that's in their tone. That's in the questioning. And here's the thing that's tough to balance, again, as we go into the holidays for other family members that want to support. That's a tough balance, because as a grieving person, I want to tell you, I don't know exactly what I want you to say. And there may be nothing you say that's going to be right.
Yeah.
Right. So if you don't talk to me, I may think, well, right. I guess they just don't want to talk to me. I guess I'm a pariah now. And then if you do talk to me, I may think, my gosh, can't they see that this is so hard for me? And why do they, you know, I mean, I got a little schizophrenia going on, you know, perhaps in that first year. But yeah. I would also encourage people. And I can speak from my own experience, you know, for the first two and a half months after Zach passed, somebody brought us dinner from my wife's work or from our friends every night. Yeah. We had so much food, we couldn't, you know, we couldn't eat it all. And then after that period stopped of having us have people every night that came over, and they would just be with us. They never said, how are you doing today? They would just come in and act normal. Right. And allow us to be however we wanted to be, right. You know, and we might not have showered for 2 or 3 days, or we weren't together. It didn't matter. They understood where we were in our process.
Right.
But now fast forward 6 months or a year. and no one reaches out. Mm-hmm. No one calls. And in fact, and part of that, I believe, is our friends' inability to know what they should do or what they should act. And for us, not having the ability to tell them what we need.
Right.
So, I mean, that's a whole lot that we can unpack, you know, some other time in the future. But I want people to know, as they go to the holidays, if you're the grieving person, don't be afraid to tell your family what you need. Mm-hmm. Now, they may or may not be able to give it to you. And then you have a choice just to honor yourself and do what you need to do. And if you're a family member of a grieving person, don't hesitate to ask them, you know, what can I give you that, you know, that you need? And they may or may not be able to tell you, you know,
Exactly. Right. And
that's just what it is. But that's part of, I wish that those were discussions that I could have had at that, in those early times.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I certainly in the earlier times, I think just, I read something recently where they were talking about grief, and it was a little boy who went over to his neighbor because his neighbor had lost his wife of 50 years. And when he came back home, his mom asked him, what were you doing over there? And he says, I was just grieving with him. And all he did was he crawled up in this man's lap and just was there with him. That's it.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. And I think that really is, that is what it is.
Yes.
It's almost like, I just want to say to people, crawl up in each other's laps and just hold each other.
Yeah.
And just be.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can say that's going to fix it.
No.
Or take the pain away or change it in any way, shape, or form. But I'm telling you, love and being present is powerful.
Yes. Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I know we're running up against your time frame, but what I want to say to you is I'm just so deeply grateful for you being in my life and for you being, I am going to still say, courageous to share your journey and talk about all of this today. Not very many people are willing to do this, Jim. And you continue to lead in terms of who you are in the world, and you are changing lives. And for that, I am eternally grateful.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So this sounds so pedestrian. at the same time, where can they get a hold of you?
Oh, absolutely. Anyone, if they want to continue this conversation or reach out to me, our website is ZacharyHortonFoundation.org. And if you go to the website, ZacharyHortonFoundation.org, that's ZACHARY, foundation.org. My phone number is on there, and there's email contacts that are on there. That's the easiest way to reach out to me, and I will get back with you.
Yes, and he will. So for those of you who joined us today for this very special edition of Voices Encouraged with Kale Wells, thank you for being with us. Please share this with others so that they can see some similarities, pick some things up, see their lives differently because of each one of our journeys. It is only through our connections that we are able to help each other rise. So love you all.